Welcome to DatCom Digital. It's time to listen to the latest crypto and DeFi market integrity news and enlightening interviews with industry thought leaders. This episode welcomes Damon Burke, Director of Business Development, Ventures, FinTech, and Partnerships, Latin America at Visa, with Chenna Rad, COO and co-founder at Solidus Labs.
Hello, everyone, again from Permissionless in West Palm Beach. And I now have the incredible opportunity to host Damon Burke. Damon leads business development for Visa on crypto and digital assets in Latin America. I think, Damon, last time we met was in Boca. Or Miami, sorry. BTC. It's hard to remember conferences.
BTC, Miami. Yeah.
But basically, it's like a bunch of the same people migrating from city to city.
Traveling circus.
Exactly. You're catching us towards the end of the day now. So that's why we're holding our beers. So first of all, cheers for another day of conference.
Gracias.
Damon, so tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey into crypto. I mean, I've never heard a non-interesting journey into crypto. So let's start with that.
Well, let's hope this isn't the first. So I'm without going back too far. I started in payments in 2015. I was working for a Dutch company called Adyen.
I'm just pushing the microphone a little closer to you.
No problem. And then I moved over to Visa in 2017. And I was investing personally, starting really not until around 2018, is when I first started buying, my first crypto. And I was, I was in San Francisco. A lot of my friends are in crypto, whether personally or professionally. And then I moved to, I went to Singapore for, most of 2019 with Visa. And then I was ready to kind of for the next step. And this role opened up in Miami, not dealing with crypto. And around, so this was leading.
Is there anything that doesn't deal with crypto?
Yeah.
It's hard. It's easy to forget sometimes.
Surprisingly at Visa. Yeah. if you talked to Visa 2 years ago, you would have a lot of pushback. And I think we've revolutionized our thinking a bit. From I really say the bottom up about how we are going to be successful. It's innovate or die, essentially. To answer your question, we came out with a whole host. We did a press release in January of 2021, and there wasn't really anybody of Visa crypto APIs, USDC settlement with cards, and there wasn't really anybody to lead LATAM. And so I rose, put my name in the hat and I kind of fell into this role.
So how long was that ago was that?
That was January 2021.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so not that, year and a half.
I guess a year and a half in crypto time, can be equivalent to, dog years or something, crypto years, right?
Fair call.
Well, and you've been having fun.
Very, very fun. Listen, obviously there's so much happening in the space. Even more so, there's so much happening in the region, right? And the crypto adoption in LATAM has just been it's been unbelievable. Inevitably, in the countries where you have the highest volatility of local fiat and the most political instability, are also the countries that have the highest user adoption of crypto.
Right.
And
it makes sense.
Whether it's usually it's kind of stable coins as a gateway drug to actually, buying assets. So it's obviously the space is super fun. It's, you hear everything that's going on, but also the region has been very active. And it's also interesting because, in Europe, you've got, they make law in The Hague, and then the other 23 countries follow suit.
Right.
And in LATAM, it's different in every country, as you guys well know. And I was just talking to your research fellows that wrote the regulation paper on LATAM.
I'm so happy to hear that he was helpful for you guys.
Super helpful. So that's kind of been the journey up till now.
A few things, I guess. First of all, you know, I remember a time not that long ago, you know, 2018, when we founded the company, the idea that, you know, someone from Visa would kind of be in all of these conferences and be able to speak about crypto the way you do, Damon, and we've had a bunch of conversations at this point.
Yeah.
It was really hard to imagine then.
Yeah.
And you're here, and it's just such a great, it's just so critical for the industry.
I think so. I'll, you know, without, it's not a, definitely not about me or any, you know, any ego boost. I do think there's a level of validity that, I mean, we're a pretty conservative company. We're, everything for us is reputation and security. And so, but when we have now, you know, gone full in on crypto, on both investing in a team and building products and, you know, presenting at conferences like this, it does, I think, build some confidence, especially, at least I see it in the developing world, where they say, oh, okay, this isn't fly by night. You guys are in? Okay. And beyond that, I also just see, I mean, we're not at the point, apart from kind of this experiment that's happening in El Salvador, we're not at the point yet where you're going and buying, you know, purchasing, making purchases in crypto. Right. It might be pulling from crypto, and that's what we're trying to help. But the on ramp and off ramp is really where we see, specifically with stable coins, is where we see a massive opportunity.
Right. And also your point about the value of crypto in places where credit cards are not as easy to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just exponential compared to places where at the end of the day, you know, there are convenient ways and means of payment.
Yeah, absolutely. We, you know, take it for granted here that the dollar that we make, today, especially in the US, right, is worth the same in a year, right? Even if our consumer price index is off and, you know, the wealth gap and all the other things, at least the dollar, a dollar is a dollar, right? And that's just not the case in much of the developing world. And as I mentioned, you know, where you have instability and volatility. So in LATAM, that means number one in the region for crypto adoption, Venezuela. Number two, Argentina. And wow, you can kind of go down the list. Now, this is per capita. Obviously, Brazil's number one, Mexico number two on an aggregate basis. But so we see a massive opportunity. And then you look at like Venezuela, where, you know, many countries in the region have already moved to dollarization. They had already moved to dollarization, right? So Ecuador, Panama, El Salvador, and in many of the countries, like they didn't, in Argentina, for example, they didn't move to dollarization, but anybody who wants to buy and hold value, they buy dollars. But there's rules around dollars. There's regulation about how you can move them. It's expensive. So, you know, buying a digital asset that's pegged to the dollar makes significantly more sense.
No, I mean, for, honestly, that's really, really great insight. Mm. I personally appreciate it. And I guess so Visa's here in crypto, making the industry better, healthier, bringing, you know, decades and decades of experience in payments and finance. Well, can we expect anything? I mean, is there anything exciting coming out? Anything we should look out for?
Yeah, I think so. As I mentioned, I think we're spending a lot of time right now in just the on ramps and off ramps, and I'll give you a few examples. So, it is extremely difficult to purchase crypto in Latin America with a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
It's or a debit card, any kind of card. The vast majority of purchases are happening with bank transfers or wire transfers, which also limits the amount of people that can purchase crypto.
Right, right.
In societies that are mostly cash-based.
Right.
So opening up acceptance. And the reason for that is twofold. One is, yes, for the underbanked and unbanked to be able to purchase crypto from cash. Two is the ability to purchase crypto or a digital asset at a certain strike price, and then be able to pay that off over several months, right? I want to buy ETH now because I believe that's a good investment, but I can then choose to pay that off in 10 months of installments. Right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Almost like a kind of option or future contract.
Yeah. I mean, you go to Brazil, you go to Chile, you go to Argentina. After every purchase, they ask you, cuantas veces, you know, how many times you want to pay it. And so that's a benefit. Recurring buys, same thing, right? You can't do a bank transfer recurring buy, except with a card. There's a whole host of reasons, chargebacks. And then on the off-ramp side, I would say, just the ability that, you know, the way that I buy crypto is very different than the way that many people in the region, buy crypto, right? It doesn't make any sense. I've got a Chase Sapphire Reserve card. I have a Wells Fargo account, and I have and then I'm buying crypto from both centralized and DeFi platforms, right? And constantly moving money in between. In LATAM, many people, it's their interaction with a crypto exchange is their first interaction with a financial institution. Issuing a card to that institution, you'd be able to make loyalty or gain loyalty by spending on that card, crypto loyalty, and being able to facilitate. Bitcoin goes up, you want to go buy a TV? Sure, no problem. You know, facilitating that spend, the off-ramp, is vital.
Yeah.
To making crypto tangible and liquid.
And that's part of why it's, and that's again part of why it's so exciting that Visa is so deep in this space.
Mm.
I do want to ask you, you know, sure, someone who at the end of the day works for, a traditional institution.
Sure.
In that sense.
A Web 2 by, sure.
Fair yeah, enough.
Absolutely.
Fair enough. I like it how, you know, it's really funny how people now talk about Web 2
yeah.
companies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, we're here at Permissionless, and I'm pretty sure that no one really, when they signed up for this conference, when they bought a sponsorship or whatnot, thought that it will happen after what happened last week with Terra and Luna.
For sure.
And I'm kind of curious to ask you from your vantage point, both personally, but also, you know, representing Visa.
Yeah.
What's your take on what happened? Obviously, it's not good.
Yeah.
But any thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah.
On what it means for the industry?
Several. Yeah. Obviously, there's a level of just, first of all, it was very sad. Right. There's a lot of people that not just lost money, but they lost their savings.
Right.
They lost livelihood.
Right. I feel like, you know, there was a lot of people asking me about the big firms who lost billions. But I keep on thinking about the people who had, you know, $5,000 in savings that they worked really hard for
100%.
And completely lost it.
Yep.
You know,
100%. I have friends from when I was in Singapore and that happened. They put all their savings. They're like, I can get 19.5%.
Right.
And then the carpet got
right.
pulled out.
And at the end of the day, sophisticated institutions are aware of the risk.
Sure.
While I have no doubt that a lot of people didn't realize just how risky it is to put money there. But sorry,
absolutely.
I keep on interrupting.
No,
you.
No. It's a great point. And I think so first of all, like a level of empathy is I think we need. Second, yes, I think we're going through a period and we will continue to go through a period of just a lack of confidence in the crypto market, right? And we're going to lose a lot of people for a certain period of time who just have lost, not just if they, you know, had losses, but they lost confidence in the technology, in the asset. And so that's unfortunate. I think though, I will say on the positive side, it's, you know, every time that we've had one of these crashes, we're going through the fifth or sixth right now, there's a level of learning and a level of maybe regulation that is, I think, quite frankly, a good thing to pressure test the system, to make it stable and be able to, safely offer a true stable coin, not an algorithmic stable coin, to the masses for all the reasons I just talked about. And, the volatility of local fiat. So I think, you know, the people here and the builders will we'll have some scar tissue. But I think it's a positive in the end. Right now, it hurts.
I mean, look, it's our job to make sure that we take this very unfortunate, incident and actually turn it into a positive by working on improving.
Absolutely. And I'll just say, from our standpoint, like we chose at least to do our initial beta test with USDC. And quite frankly, because, you know, it's a very simple model. It's a one-to-one. They, you know, they mint a coin and a dollar in the bank. And so, we'll see what ends up coming out of this. But I think we believe that the future is in, there's a lot of just positive aspects that you can garner from stable coins, and that can only benefit societies and personal finance. And so that's, and, but I do think, you know, with, when you have to have a lessons learned and, you know, an after action report when you have go through incidents like this.
Yeah. And look, and I think that, first of all, thank you for saying all of that. Mm. I think that's exactly the message you need to get out of this. And to be honest with you, what happened last week was so dramatic that I feel like it's, you know, there's not necessarily going to be a choice in terms of, like, you know, how regulators are going to respond, you know, because the risks have been so dramatically presented. And you know, we're in the business of mitigating risk.
So we'll
be doing our best to provide those tools. And I'm so delighted that, again, I can't speak to how valuable I think for the industry is, you know, organizations like Visa becoming constantly more involved.
I think it's a two-part. We've come around. We've come a long way in the last, you know, I would say 3 years. I have several people on our team that had come from the outside and approached Visa about crypto, you know, pre-2020, and didn't have an open door. To your point, I mean, and without kind of blowing up our head, we have a name recognition and a brand that I think hopefully represents stability, security,
trust,
right? And we don't want to do anything to jeopardize that. And so we're trying to kind of make our foray, help governments to, whether it's building their own CBDCs or successfully being able to utilize private, you know, sovereign stable coins. I think the benefits of loans or smart contracts or any of these, you know, tools that fintechs are building are going to be countless, and it's only going to bring societies up. But we have to do it safely and securely.
Well, first of all, cheers to that.
Yes.
And as a last question.
Sure, sure.
I'm genuinely curious. What's your next conference?
Oh, my God, man. Jeez. Well, I'll tell you. So I know Consensus is coming up. I haven't confirmed whether I'm going to attend that. But there, what's exciting is there are three main conferences that are happening in the region, in Latin America. So there's one in Panama in 20. In, let's see. When is it? Mid to end of it's a blockchain conference in Panama, mid to end of June. Hmm. And then there's one in Medellin and one in Rio in the beginning of September. Super exciting. And this has kind of become a thing in the last, you know, both Asia, Europe, US, in the last 2-3 years. But now you're starting to see this movement happening in the region. And I think it's only going to bring both experts and products and more communication and collaboration. So I'm excited about that.
Super exciting things happening in Latin America. And you're kind of tempting me. So I'm going to look into those. And I hope everyone else.
Mi casa tu casa.
So again, cheers. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Pleasure. Nice meeting you.
This episode of DatCom Digital was brought to you by Solidus Labs. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe and be sure to join the conversation by following us on LinkedIn and Twitter.